You're listening to CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. I'm Shalaka Jadhav. The Long Dash Festival is a free two-day event that explores the creative intersections between art and science. Hosted at Rare Charitable Research Reserve in Cambridge, Ontario, and co-presented by Musagetis, the festival takes its name from the Long Dash Skipper, a brown and orange butterfly found in grassy habitats, including at the site of the festival. I'm speaking with Elwood Jimmy, Indigenous Programs Curator at Musagetis. Elwood, could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your role at Musagetis and how it folds into your involvement with the Long Dash Festival?
Sure. Thank you, Shalaka, for inviting me to speak about the festival. I'm very happy about that. My name is Elwood Jimmy. As you mentioned, I'm the Indigenous Programs Curator at the Musagetis Foundation. I've been there for several years, and part of my job at Musagetis is to work with RARE on a number of initiatives. We have three programs that I kind of oversee in collaboration with RARE. One is the Eastern Kama Literary Residency. It's a residency that's for predominantly Indigenous writers, but we also have different ally writers that participate in that residency. Then we also have a fellowship program called the Butterfly Fellowship Program. And that's where artists that kind of blend the two worlds of arts and science and biology, these sorts of things. That's a program that's co-curated with my collaborator, Lisa Hermer. Lisa's a Guelph-based artist, and she's, apart from co-curating that program, she's also co-curator of the Long Dash Festival. So that gives a little bit of context of where Musagetis and RARE sort of intersect. And this is the most public-facing aspect of our collective programming that is really open to the public, whereas the fellowships and the literary residency, those are more process-based projects and that kind of support artists on their kind of journey towards something maybe a little more public-facing. But this is the one time of the year where RARE and Musagetis, kind of the outputs of our collaboration, we get to share with the public.
And 2026 marks the festival's third edition. What ideas or themes have been guiding this year's program?
I think when we work on each festival, we don't necessarily have a theme in mind. It's very artist driven. So a lot of the artists that you'll see in this year's particular program, they come from those residency or fellowship programs that I talked about. For instance, this year we have a sound walk that's curated by January Rogers. January was one of our former literary artists in residence a few years back, and Musagetis and RARE are really committed to, once we initiate those relationships, in particular with Indigenous people from the region, we want to make sure we kind of honor those commitments, and also a commitment to really honoring their contribution and presence, as well as, you know, how the land is situated, because RARE is currently situated on Six Nations land. So we want to make sure that when we're working and towards these kind of restoration and reconciliatory efforts, not just with the land, but with the people, that, you know, people from Six Nations are involved. So this year in particular, this year we have more Six Nations representation than we've had in previous years, but that's kind of an ongoing thread throughout each festival, is to have somebody from Six Nations cultivating this joint initiative and this kind of joint relationship building with RARE and place. So I feel that's kind of, if there is sort of a theme, it's definitely around building wiser relationships, not just with the land at RARE, but also building wiser relationships with the original inhabitants, the stewards of the land, and ensuring, you know, just wiser relationships, and also maybe working towards, kind of an essential, maybe an eventual co-governance, you know, of that land. And these are all relationships that, you know, I think there's a strong desire from the side of RARE and Musagetis to work towards kind of fulfilling those commitments. Yeah.
Yeah, and you started to speak a little bit about that, but I think in particular, in your role as Indigenous Programs Curator, how do Indigenous knowledge systems and ways of relating to the land inform your approach to programming the festival? So you've spoken to how the fellowship sort of serves as a bit of maybe a pool to help support the programming for the festival, but I'm curious of maybe other motivations or ways that those are guided.
Sure. Just on a more personal note, I'm Indigenous and I've been working in the arts for close to 30 years now. And I'm not from this part of the world. I'm from the Midwest. I'm from northern Saskatchewan, but I moved here maybe about 2012, so 14 years ago. So I've been in southern Ontario since then. And I feel, as somebody not from here, but still, I mean, I'm a mix. Like, my father's Cree, my mother's Anishinaabe, but Anishinaabe territory covers, a lot of where we're situated right now as we speak. And so I feel there's some grounding in how I can relate to this place. And so that's definitely a foundation. I find, like, I feel when most people move to a new place, they try to kind of situate themselves and find out who the people are that are the kind of customary and historical and traditional, caretakers of the land. And certainly that's what I've been doing over the last 14 years, is really trying to engage and have, good relations with the people of this place. And so I feel, over the last several years, I've had the wonderful opportunity to meet so many Indigenous people of this place, and people have been so lovely and kind and open, and I feel very privileged. And I encourage so many other people to do that. Like, you don't have to be Indigenous to go on that journey. Like, it just, I feel, so many, there's so many opportunities and invitations to be a good relative, and to be a good neighbor. And so it's been a beautiful journey to get to this point, and also to work for, a foundation like Musa Geddes and Rare, where there is this actual kind of desire to work deeper and to work more meaningfully, because there's a lot of organizations I've been involved with where, it's kind of just a surface appreciation, or maybe it's just checking a box saying, oh, we did that this 1 year. But it's nice to be in a space where people are committed to the long haul. And there's people that are involved that, are act as advisors. Of course, the artists that we work with, I can name some. Like, this year, for instance, like, we have Terry Montour and Santi Smith and Shelley Nero, and I mentioned January Rogers. These are all artists from Six Nations. And even though they're engaged as curators and artists, they've also been advisors, because they participated in some of our programs, and they definitely, their feedback is integral to hosting an event that has integrity and is, committed to, different layers of responsibility and accountability. And through my work at Musa Geddes, we have an elder in residence. His name's Peter Schuler. He works in the kind of Guelph, Kitchener-Waterloo region extensively. He's originally from the Mississaugas of the Credit, but he's based on Six Nations. He's married into Six Nations, and he's been a wonderful, wonderful teacher and a wonderful friend over the last several years. So I feel, with all these different influences, we really strive to interweave Indigenous knowledge and Indigenous lived experience on this land into what we're striving to do with the festival.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Elder Peter Schuler's text that was published by Publication Studio Guelph, The Sound of the Homeland Drum. And for anyone who's listening, the text and the link to the text can be shared in the show notes as well. Yeah, the poetry that's in the text is just so sharp and clear. Like I think he just points to things that are unavoidable in this time. Yeah, thanks for sharing a bit more of that context of how these pieces are coming together. Yeah, and go ahead.
I just wanted to add, yeah, that I love Peter's work, and it's a real pleasure to support his work. The text that you referred to, it's a body of work spanning, I think, close to 40 years. I think when we were going through that particular text, some of the text dated back to, like, 1980 or late 70s. So it's a real pleasure to have that text in all in kind of all in one place, all his output of poetry and prose. And like you said, it's very sharp. And I think what I love so much about his work is that, it's very honest and it's very genuine. It's coming from a very genuine place, and it's not, it doesn't shy away too from some of the complexities and contradictions within contemporary Indigenous life either. I'm a huge fan of that work, and I'm so happy that we're the vessel that was able to put that body of work together and put it out in the world.
And I'm sort of following that note. I'd be curious if you can highlight, you've already spoken to a couple of artists, but if you can highlight one or two artists or researchers or projects this year that are really embodying the dialogue between artistic practice and scientific inquiry that the Long Dash Festival is interested in celebrating.
One thing that comes to mind, speaking of Peter Schuller, I could talk about one of the artists for sure has been influenced immensely by Peter. On the Sunday, the 26th, is a full day of workshops. So if you check out the festival website, it's longdashfestival.ca, I believe. You'll see the schedule of workshops. There's a number of them. I think there's 5 to 6 workshops with different people, but I'll talk about one in particular. So a Buckthorn project with Don Russell. And Don Russell is a local artist based just outside Guelph, and he's actually worked with Peter for several years. And I feel if you read the book, The Sound of the Homeland Drum, there's a piece around the buckthorn that Peter wrote, and just talking about it being this invasive species, and talking about how, it's unrelenting work in terms of trying to control it, like even within Peter's small part of the world. And I think Don was very much influenced by this story that Peter shared, which I think Peter uses it kind of as an allegory for sort of, kind of settler colonial project in Canada, where, it kind of, the buckthorn as a metaphor, is just kind of outlines kind of the complexities of settler, colonial, and Indigenous life, and just just as a lesson and a practice, really, of just trying to maintain. You can't get rid of it, but at the same time, we're just trying to maintain, and we're just trying to figure out wiser ways to move with it. So all that to say, so Don has this Buckthorn project where, he's asking people who participate in that particular workshop, where they'll be participating in the kind of a removal of the buckthorn, but then also creating something. So there'll be teachings affiliated with that, but then also there'll be an opportunity to kind of create a collective artwork, in the spot where they remove the buckthorn, and finding ways to use the buckthorn, that they removed in more generative ways. So that's one of the projects I think that really kind of relates to stewardship and land conservation. And I can speak on Saturday. Saturday is the more performance day. There's January Rogers has the sound walk that she's curated, featuring a number of different artists. But I can speak a little bit about Santee Smith, who's also doing a performance at the Slit Barn, which is at Rare. It's one of the buildings situated at Rare. Santee was one of the artists that participated in one of the Question Mark Butterfly Fellowships I had mentioned earlier. So she participated in a year-long fellowship at RARE, and her background is as primarily, I mean, Santi's multi-talented, but primarily I think she's more known for as a choreographer and a dancer. And so she worked there for all four seasons. And so her and her collaborator, I believe his name is Shane Paulus, they collaborated on I guess like a film that's documenting all four seasons, and accompanying that film is a dance performance that will happen at the barn on the Saturday. So I feel that's Santi's very dynamic way of working with the seasons and being influenced by the seasons and the land at Rare and turning it into this beautiful dance work that we'll see. The video that they've created will run on a loop, like for the duration of that Saturday. I think it starts at 10 o'clock and will end at about 4 o'clock. But there'll be two dance performances in the morning. There'll be one at 10:15 and one at 11:15. So we would really highly encourage people to come in the morning so that I mean, people can come all day and they can experience the video, which will be sort of an immersive way of experiencing. But if they want to experience the dance performance, they should come in the morning. So, I mean, I'm just talking about those two projects in particular, but really I feel like everything that's happening that day, everybody has been really intentional about creating a moment or creating a piece or a project that's really connected to the land at Rare.
That's great. And the festival itself is sited at Rare Charitable Research Reserve. And so I'm curious, as a festival programmer, how has the landscape itself sort of been a collaborator in this work, or how has it helped shape the experience of the festival this year or over the last few years as well?
Well, it definitely, as a curator, kind of programmer of the space, it's a little bit different where, when you're working in more controlled environment, there's a lot more kind of freedoms and more different ways you can sort of, maybe manipulate the environment a little bit, like if you were working in a gallery per se. But here it teaches you to, it teaches you that you can't do that, like the land is in some ways it's very fixed. So, there's no moving around that. You have to work with what's there. And then also, there's all these other intangible unknown elements that you have to learn to move with, like inclement weather, like, I mean, as we're talking, like, just a few days earlier, we were going through an event with like the forest fires and how they've impacted people up north, but then also even down here in the south, like where we were still impacted, in terms of air quality. And so there's these, and as time goes on, climate collapse, climate change, it's I feel, it's one of the reasons why we do put on this festival is just to have people maybe reflect deeper on what's happening in the world with regard to climate collapse and how, and sometimes those ideas are very daunting. Like, you see it, what's happening around the world, and you're like, what can I do? What can I do? And or I think with the intention of the festival here is maybe like, we can start small. Maybe, we can do small things that maybe prompt people to start to think deeper and think about ways that they can contribute, and just be wiser relatives to the land. And yeah, and so those are the considerations. Like, it's in, with regard to, I really do like to think of the land as a collaborator and just finding ways to honor that, and so we're just, I think myself and Lisa, who's a co-curator, we're always thinking of ways that are, we let's program things, but then let's program things that are not, that are not, that don't, that of course that don't harm the land and don't, that really forefront it. I think that's the thing with the festival. I think there's a collective intention to really forefront the land and how important it is to really honor these spaces that, that are, we're committed to to not developing or not, not trying to change, but to actually maintain a space for the land and all its inhabitants to exist. And yeah, so I feel in that way. The land is really, it's a really important, it's probably the most integral partner and collaborator in this endeavor.
Yeah, and I think even the namesake of the festival, the Long Dash Skipper, kind of helps orient and come back to our more than human collaborators, which I really love about all the fellowships as well, which are also named after local butterflies. And yeah, one of the goals of the festival is to foster a conversation across these disciplines. What kinds of connections or conversations are you hoping that people will leave with?
I think, I hope that, I guess, like, if I do have a hope or an aspiration for the festival, it is, yes, of course, that people can be prompted. Like, if I don't feel one day out at Rare is going to change a lot of things, but at the same time, I feel like maybe, I guess, like a metaphor of planting a seed, and maybe it might not impact people right away. Like, say, a particular workshop, people can maybe just, I'll just give a small example for myself. It's like sometimes I go to a workshop and I'll be like, oh, that was fun, and then it kind of, it'll go away, but then a lot of the time I'll encounter something else that, maybe triggers a memory of that workshop, or maybe there wasn't something that I particularly understood at that particular time, and then I'll be like, oh no, that makes sense now, or I get it now, I get what they were trying to say, and I feel all, that's all we can do, is like, we can't aggressively try to push things on people, but we can create the space and create the conditions where there's an open space for people to have these things kind of emerge for them, and I'm hoping that's what we can do with the festival, is just creating and holding a space where people are allowed to kind of reflect and think deeper without, I guess, without being interrupted, because we're in a world that's constantly trying to interrupt us from diving deeper into really complex issues. And I hope, for the couple of days, whoever comes, that they're given just kind of the time and the space to immerse themselves in a different way of relating, in a different pace. And hopefully, they'll be repeat visitors, because Rare is a, it's one of the great things about it is it's a public site. It's open all year round, and there are trail sites, and there's community gardens, and all sorts of different things that are happening year round, in addition to a lot of the art activities and fellowships that myself and my colleagues at Music Eddies are co-curating. There's a number of very kind of scientific and biology-based endeavors going on there all year round. And yeah, so I guess it's just, and it's a beautiful place. Like, you wouldn't think that's there, kind of in the middle of, there's all these kind of urban areas, but it's this wonderful gem right in the middle of kind of, Cambridge, and the whole Kitchener-Waterloo area, that I think I'm sure a lot of people know about already, but it's nicer, being great for more people to know that there's this space that you can go out and really immerse yourself, for an afternoon, regardless of whether the festival is there or not. You can do it year round.
The Long Dash Festival takes place July 25th and 26th at Rare Charitable Research Reserve in Cambridge, Ontario. On both days of the festival, Cedar Spoon Indigenous Catering will be providing a light lunch. On Sunday, July 26th, join labor and Indigenous rights activist Terry Montour, who will be speaking to the responsibilities we hold to the natural world and the true meaning of land back. The Long Dash Festival is free to attend, and listeners can find the full schedule and learn more about the festival at longdashfestival.ca. You've been listening to CKMS News on 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. This is Shalaka Jadhav, and thank you for tuning in. The theme music on today's show was Polyvinyl by Anamoya, courtesy of the Free Music Archive, under the Creative Commons Attribution License. You can find it at the Free Music Archive, freemusicarchive.org. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, Heritage Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can access archived versions of this program at radiowaterloo.ca/news and listen to all the Local Journalism Initiative content at frequencynews.ca. If you want to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover, email us at news@radiowaterloo.ca.